Chapter 1. Humans like to think of themselves as the apex predator on the planet. Sure, people sometimes get eaten by a shark or mauled by a mountain lion, but we are not, as a rule, a part of anyone's regular diet. That all changed when the dinosaurs returned, and we found ourselves in a battle for survival. I knew in my gut that things were going to get worse before they got better. More dinosaurs arrived every day, thanks to the mysterious portals that would pop open just long enough to let the great beasts wander through. And despite all of our technology, no one had yet figured out why the portals were appearing or how to stop them from appearing. At least, not as far as the public knew. All we had been told was that the world's governments were hard at work on the problem, but it wasn't hard to see that the government was on the losing side of the battle. I had started this spring as an exchange student at Cambridge University, and now I found myself driving through the English countryside on a police motorcycle as we tried to reach the small town of Ravenscar in Yorkshire. I have two stunning companions, a blonde Brit named Becca, who looked like a supermodel and carried herself like a warrior queen, and Haewon, the beautiful blue-eyed Korean goth princess with a mysterious family and endless array of hidden talents, and a sharp eye with the rifle. We had just left Peterborough and were headed north, with a planned short stop at RAF Scampton to deliver a briefcase. I had no idea what was inside the case other than some vague notion of reports and DNA analysis of the dinos. Brigadier Walston hadn't told us much when he'd asked us to deliver it, and part of me wondered if it was really that important. Well, surely if it was critical to the Army's success, they would have arranged for a helicopter to deliver it.
"You look serious,"
Becca called out over the roar of the motorcycles. The Brit and I, on our police bikes, rode side by side while Haewon, on her red and black Triumph, was a few feet ahead. It made conversation with Becca easier, but nearly impossible with Haewon. We needed to find some communication gear, I decided, so we wouldn't have to yell over the engines.
"Just wondering what's in the briefcase," I called back.
"Who cares?"
Becca replied.
"We drop it off, and then we keep going. Let them figure it out."
"You're not at all curious?" I asked.
"That never works out well. At least not in the movies. The nosy person always regrets poking around in the spy's business."
"But why would Walston give it to us?"
"Because we're going north, and he didn't have anyone to spare."
"He could have requested a helicopter. He could have sent it with the Archbishop's chopper."
"Maybe. But there may not be that many helicopters left. We've only seen that one since we left Cambridge, and we haven't seen any airplanes at all."
She had a point, and it was yet another reason to worry about how successful the military really was in tackling the dino problem. I started to ponder the possible outcomes if dinos took over the world, and I nearly missed the shadow that flew past us a few moments later. I caught a glimpse of it out of the corner of my eye, and then I saw Becca look up. She pointed toward the sky, and I glanced up to see three large bird-like figures overhead. Except these were bigger than any bird I'd ever seen or even heard about.
"Faster! Let's try to outrun them!"
Becca and I revved our engines and pulled alongside Haewon. She glanced in my direction, and I pointed toward the sky. The Korean nodded, and we tore down the A-15, past abandoned cars and broken buildings as we tried to outrun the bird things that were now following us. One of the creatures let out a piercing caw, and I looked up in time to see it peel away from the other two and start to dive toward us. The bird was enormous, with a 30-foot wingspan and a long, flat bill filled with teeth. There were stringy feathers along its back and head, but the wings were more like those of a bat. It had gray eyes nearly the same color as its skin, and sharp talons on each of its four limbs.
"Shit!"
I yelled as I pushed the bike as fast as I could. A shadow closed over us and began to grow larger just as we were forced to swerve around an abandoned semi. The rig bought us some space as the flying reptile was forced to pull back a bit. We shot around the rig and nearly missed the turn in the road, but we managed to stay on the blacktop. The road made another quick loop back to the right, but we ended up bouncing along in the grass and rocky soil in order to avoid a pair of abandoned cars. The flying lizards called to each other again, but we swerved back onto the road and hit the gas one more time. We took off just as another dino started its dive, and we managed to move far enough ahead that it was forced to give up and retreat back into the thermals.
"These bikes were a great idea!"
I yelled as we moved out of range of the lizards. The dinos still lingered overhead, but they were falling further and further behind. I let out a whoop and revved the engine of my motorbike, and then I leaned in to take another sharp curve. A heartbeat later, I had to slam on the brakes and skid to a halt to avoid smashing into the back of a minivan. The girls screeched to a halt as well, and we took in the massive pileup that blocked the highway. It had probably started off as little more than a fender bender, but throw in dinosaurs and abandoned vehicles, and it had quickly turned into a horrific scene of burnt cars, overturned semis, and bits and pieces of human remains. And there was no easy way around it. We were between towns with walled-off fields to either side. There was no gap in the field stones that I could see, and no clear path through the carnage. The three lizards recognized our predicament, and another loud caw went up.
"Get to the wall!"
I ordered. Becca and Haywan leapt from their bikes and ran toward the nearest stretch of wall, even as they tugged their rifles around. I saw Becca's rifle get hooked on her chest rig, and she let out an impressive string of oaths as she tugged on the weapon. I tried not to grin as I swept my gaze back toward the sky. The winged lizards had spotted the girls as they ran for cover, and I took a shot at one of the beasts when it started to circle lower. It squawked as the bullet found the edge of a wing, but it managed to stay airborne. It climbed higher and cawed again, and the other two joined it in a tight formation. I hoped the trio might leave now that the bikes had gone still, but they circled above us and waited for one of us to move. I ran to the wall when I saw that the girls were set and had their rifles ready, and halfway there, I heard Becca open fire with her automatic. There was another squawk from above me as I squeezed between the girls, and Haywan whooped in triumph. I looked up and saw that the lizards were still circling above, though one was lower than the other two and appeared to have problems staying airborne. One of the wings was bloody, and the tail looked shorter than it had been.
"Damn thing is still alive,"
Becca fumed. "We can finish it off," I replied. "It won't be able to stay up for much longer. We'll have to wait for the other two to either move closer or fly away." The injured lizard began to sink lower, despite its strenuous efforts to stay airborne. It flapped its wings like a modern bird and lifted its head to try and pull itself upright, but gravity slowly won out. The bird thing sank lower and lower until it crashed into the road in the middle of the pileup. We could hear it moving around in the debris, and then it finally emerged with its green feathers now covered in soot. One wing hung limply by its side, and I could see streaks of blood along the feathers. The beast sneezed as if it had sucked in a snoutful of ashes, and it shook itself like a dog. A cloud of dirt and dust concealed it for a moment, and then it stepped forward and peered around the road. It spotted us and let out another shrill caw, and then started to run toward us on its stunted hind legs.
"How stupid can you be?"
Becca demanded as we all opened fire. I aimed for the head, and I saw my first shot smash into the long bill, and a second shot pierce the flat skull just above the eyes. But the whole body soon jerked and spasmed as the bullets from the girl's automatics tore into the creature's torso. Bloody feathers floated in the air, and thick blood poured onto the hard surface of the road. Up above, the two surviving bird dinos squawked in anger, and I saw that one of the shadows was growing considerably larger and moving right toward us. I swept the rifle upwards and caught the diving lizard in my sight. It was moving at an incredible pace as it swept toward us like an eagle skimming over the surface of the lake. It opened its mouth, probably to call out, and I took my shot. The bullet hit the back of its throat, and then all I could see was blood as it poured into the creature's mouth. It did a somersault in midair, as if it had suddenly forgotten how to fly, and then the body fell to the ground and splatted against the top of a nearby car. If my shot hadn't killed it, the broken neck as it smashed into the roof of the Opal certainly did. That left just the one dino, and I saw Haywan open fire just to my left. I swiveled around in time to see the Korean huntress shred the wings on the remaining lizard, and then hit it with two more quick rounds that punched into its torso. The beast dropped like a rock and landed on its back in the field on the other side of the road. I saw the wings flutter for a moment when it hit, and then it went still.
Another new dinosaur,
Heiwan noted.
Not like the pterodactyl back at the library, but probably related. I don't really care, as long as they're dead,
Becca said. See any more? I asked, as I scanned the sky.
No,
Becca replied, though she remained plastered against the wall.
They didn't attack the bikes,
Heiwan noted.
What do you want about?
Becca asked.
They came straight at us.
No, she's right, I said. Once we got off the bikes, they totally ignored them. They were focused on us.
But you're going to say they're smarter than we thought again, aren't you?
Yes, Heiwan and I both said at the same time.
It creeps me out when you say that, and I really wish you wouldn't keep pointing it out. Sorry,
Heiwan apologized.
But it is interesting.
Why not go after the bikes? They were moving.
Until we got off and ran away.
But the bikes are bigger and shinier.
Also more noisy,
Heiwan added.
All the things that should attract a predator. Okay, but there aren't any more around that we can ask. Maybe we could move this discussion indoors somewhere. Bourne is just ahead. Maybe we could find somewhere to hole up for a short bit and have something to drink while we ponder how intelligent dinosaurs are.
It seems like we only just started out, I said as we walked slowly back toward the bikes. Do we really want to stop now?
We've made good time from Peterborough already,
Heiwan replied.
A short break would be okay. Besides, we still have to figure out how to get around this mess,
Becca pointed out. We'll just have to go very slowly until we get to the other side. If it gets too bad, we may have to get off and push the bikes.
Is there another road to Scampton?
Heiwan asked.
Maybe we could try going back to find a way around.
I'd rather just go through this if we can. Going backwards only waste more time, and we'll probably just end up back in Peterborough.
Jason's right. We'll be back at our starting point before we find another road north, but we should be able to squeeze the bikes through.
We eased forward, and after we studied the outer edge of the scene, we found a narrow path between the lanes of traffic. We drove into the heart of the disaster then, and soon all I could smell was burnt rubber and charred meat. The deeper we went, the worse it became, and the cars and trucks in the middle were barely more than metal shells. Fuck. My eyes started to water from the ash that still lingered, and both girls started to cough. The road had actually melted in spots, and pools of black goo threatened to latch onto the tires, but the engines had enough power to muscle us through the tar. We drove past skeletons, both human and dinosaur, and then I caught a whiff of clean air and saw that the trail widened ahead. I rode the bike past the last few cars and then stopped to watch for the girls. Heiwan emerged first, her waist-length hair now weighed down by the ash, followed a moment later by Becca, whose golden hair was looking less shiny.
I could definitely use a water break,
Becca rasped.
My throat's sore after driving through that.
So is mine, I admitted, and then coughed.
Let's get to Bourne,
Heiwan suggested.
Find somewhere out of sight to take a break.
We revved the engines and sped down the motorway far faster than was intended. We were all ready to find a safe place to shelter for a bit, and we weren't even halfway to Lincoln. I didn't regret leaving Cambridge, but I was starting to understand just how long it was going to take to reach Ravenscar. We reached the edge of Bourne and rode by the sign that welcomed us to the historic town of Bourne, birthplace of Harryward, Lord of Brunn. I would never claim to be an expert on English history, but I was familiar enough to know names from Winston Churchill to Henry Plantagenet. I could even remember that the Norman invasion was led by William the Conqueror, who defeated King Harold at the Battle of Hastings. What I couldn't come up with was anything about Harryward, Lord of Brunn. Like most of the towns we'd been through, Bourne was quiet. People no longer walked along the streets or drove to work in the morning, and if someone did have to leave their house, they did so quickly and quietly. And so, we were the only people on the A-15 as we entered the town, and it was hard to say just how many humans might still be around. There were signs of dinosaur attacks, from damaged buildings to a few spots that looked like they had been hit with some of the venomous acid of the Diffos. We had to go around the remains of a fire that looked like it had started in a cluster of buildings and then swallowed up everything for several blocks, including cars and streetlights. By the time we pulled back onto the A-15, we were in the heart of the town, in the ancient market area. And we saw the first humans we'd seen since we left the cathedral in Peterborough. Two men stood outside the sandbag door of a local pub. one with a rusty shotgun and the other holding a polished cricket bat. They watched us drive up, and though the man with the shotgun lowered the gun from his shoulder, at least he didn't point it at us.
"That's close enough,"
the man with the cricket bat said, as we rolled to a stop in front of the pub. Both men were probably in their late 40s, and both had new beards and pale blue eyes. The man with the shotgun was a ginger and still had soil under his fingernails and on his clothes. I pegged him as a farmer, which explained the gun he held in his large hands. The other man had dark hair and bushy eyebrows and hands that looked like they hadn't dug in the soil since he was a toddler. "We're just passing through," I said. "We had a run-in with some flying lizards and then had to drive through a massive pileup on the roadway. We just wanted to take a break and get something to drink before heading on." The two men looked at each other for a moment, and then the farmer scratched at his beard while he studied us.
"And where would you be heading?" the farmer asked. "A yank on the copper's bike."
"Yorkshire," I replied.
"Long drive,"
the farmer replied.
"Dangerous drive."
"So we've noticed," I said. "We're just happy to see other people. We haven't encountered all that many. Well, outside of Peterborough."
"You've been to Peterborough?"
the dark-haired man asked in surprise. "We've just come from there," I replied.
"We heard the army had taken over the power station, but that was it,"
the dark-haired man said.
"We just figured they must be doing their jobs because we still have power, although sometimes we lose it for a bit now."
"You say you met some folks in Peterborough," the farmer pressed.
"We did," I said. "Mostly army personnel who had taken over the power station. We helped the engineering team out, and we were at a service in the cathedral this morning."
"They're still holding church services?"
the dark-haired man asked in surprise. "It was a special one," I said. "The Archbishop of Canterbury was there, I trailed off, not quite certain how to say that the Archbishop was now dead after being eaten by a dinosaur. The two men seemed to understand, though, and they both bowed their heads for a moment of silent prayer.
"It's been some time since we've seen any strangers," the farmer said when he finally lifted his head. "And it's hard to get much news from the internet these days. When we do get service, it's mostly videos of dinosaurs running amok."
"Can't reach anyone to talk to them," the dark-haired man added. "Tried to call London a few times, but that was a no-go. Tried to call family up in Scotland, but couldn't reach them either."
"We can tell you what we've seen so far," I offered. "We just need some water to wash away the grime."
"And a cuppa would be nice,"
Becca added.
"Something to help clear out our throats,"
Haywan said. The two men looked uncertain, and I saw the farmer study our high-powered weapons and the motorbikes. We probably looked like some sort of dangerous criminals, but we hadn't started shooting the place up as soon as we saw the pub, nor had we threatened to burn the place down if they didn't let us inside. I tried to put on my most pleasant face, and the girls both smiled as well.
"Wouldn't mind hearing some news,"
the dark-haired man said.
"Aye," the farmer agreed. "You can go in, then, and see what Gilda's willing to spare."
"Is there somewhere we can stow the bike so the dinos don't spot them?" I asked.
"There's an alley just up there,"
the farmer said, as he pointed toward his left.
"Dark place. Not much more than rats in there."
"Ew, rats. I can handle rats,"
Haywan said.
"They're nothing after the dinosaurs. If only that were true,"
the blonde sighed. We almost drove past the alley. It was so narrow and dark. But a quick whistle from the farmer helped us realize we had found the spot. It barely qualified as an alley, truth be told, and the bikes would only fit in single file. We finally turned off the engines, dismounted, and pushed the bikes backwards into the alley. It smelled like rotting garbage, and I could hear rats squeaking, even if I couldn't see them.
"Let's go,"
Becca pleaded.
"No."
We hurried away from the alley and ran along the road back to the pub. The farmer helped us over the sandbags while the dark-haired man pulled the door open. We ducked inside and found ourselves in a classic English pub with dark wood paneling, an oak wood floor gray with age, a massive stone fireplace, and a long wooden bar with brass railings that took up one whole end of the room. There were tables scattered around the floor, and something that smelled like roast beef drifted in from the door to the kitchen. More importantly, there were people in the room, 5 at the tables and 1 behind the bar. The group looked up in surprise when we stepped inside and looked even more surprised when they didn't recognize us. The man outside said we might be able to get some tea or water in here, I said, in exchange for news about what we've seen.
Here now, where did you come from?
The woman behind the bar demanded. Well, we just came from Peterborough, I said. Before that, we were in Cambridge. Students, then, a man at one end of the tables proclaimed. He could have been a professor at Cambridge himself. He had the longish hair, the glasses perched on the end of his nose, and the slight air of superiority. He also had a book open on the table in front of him, and was the only one who was sitting alone. The other four, three men and a woman, sat together at a table in the center of the room and were playing a round of Cards Against Humanity.
You came all the way from Cambridge?
The woman at the table asked.
We did,
Becca said as she dropped into a seat near the door.
And it's taken us forever just to get this far, and the adventures we've had. Ha ha!
The woman behind the bar chuckled.
That's why those two idiots let you in, so we could get the latest and pass it on to them.
I think that was the general idea, I admitted, as Haywan and I sat down as well.
Well, we haven't been serving outsiders.
The woman behind the bar mused. There haven't been any outsiders in nearly a month, the professor pointed out. It's not like that was a real policy.
I managed to talk to my sister in Birmingham last week, one of the men at the card game said. But that's been it. We only managed a few minutes before the line went out. Birmingham was hard hit, one of the other men noted. That's what it sounded like. RAF blew up half the place trying to kill off the dinosaurs, the man with the sister said. They were lucky to still be alive.
We saw the army do the same thing in Cambridge, I said. They were using helicopters to attack the dinosaurs before they pulled out.
And where did they all go?
The woman at the card game demanded.
I haven't seen hide nor hair of them.
They're protecting the infrastructure, the professor replied.
So they claim,
the woman snorted. If they weren't, we wouldn't still have running water and electricity, the professor pointed out. It's true, I added. There are soldiers at the power station in Peterborough. They're there to protect the station for as long as possible.
You've met them?
The man with the sister asked.
We did, I replied. They've been able to protect the station so far.
And the engineers are there all the time, too,
Haywan added.
Just to keep the power going.
The other people in the room absorbed that for a moment, and then the barkeep harrumphed.
Well, we can spare some water,
the barkeep announced.
And some tea if you want that. And I'll have some scones left over from yesterday. They should be all right.
I definitely need tea,
Becca replied.
I would like tea, but maybe a glass of water first,
Haywan suggested.
Just to help clear my throat.
I nodded in agreement, and the three of us smiled at the barkeep. She twitched her nose a few times, and then she disappeared through the doors into the kitchen.
So, what does Cambridge look like now?
The woman at the card game asked.
It's taken a lot of hits,
Becca replied.
The military were using bombs on the dinos, and a lot of buildings were damaged or destroyed as well. There aren't many people still around, and those that are holed up wherever they could. A lot of stores were looted once people got desperate for supplies, but unless you have a garden or such, even that's going to run out.
Where did you three hide? The professor asked. At a museum on the campus, I replied.
Ah, smart choice, the professor said. No windows to speak of, I'm sure. Plenty of rooms to hide in, and even an alarm in case someone or something breaks in.
That was our thought as well,
Haywan agreed.
But portals appeared on the campus, and it became very hard to stay. You've seen some of these portals?
The woman asked.
We have,
Becca replied.
Look a bit like tears or such. Or more like someone peeled back a piece of wallpaper and the dinosaur world was underneath. And it grows,
Haywan added.
And there's a popping sound when it appears.
They're big, I said. At least all the ones we've seen. I don't know if there are smaller portals that have opened for the smaller dinosaurs.
It was still a big portal that opened for that snake,
Becca pointed out.
I mean, it was long, but it wasn't super tall. But it was the same type of portal.
That's true, I agreed.
Snake doesn't sound very scary,
the woman said.
It was a giant snake,
Haywan replied.
It ate two men whole before they realized it was there.
Titanoboa, the professor mused. Or something like it. Dr. Rinton there has been reading up on older dinosaurs, the man with the sister in Birmingham offered.
You're a doctor, I said.
Of philosophy. Not medicine, I'm afraid.
Yes. Definitely the professorial type. I was surprised when he didn't launch into a review of all of the dinosaurs he had catalogued so far.
but perhaps we were saved from that by the return of the barkeep. The buxom woman placed a glass of water and an empty teacup in front of each of us, and then added a teapot and a plate of scones to the table.
So, did I miss any interesting news?
The barkeep asked. Cambridge isn't faring well, the professor replied. And our young friends here have seen portals.
Have you?
The barkeep asked.
I have as well, though it were early on in this mess and no one believed me. Great big gash in the sky, I said, and they all looked at me like I'd drunk all the ale in the place.
Did you see what came through?
Haywan asked.
Big thing with horns,
the barkeep replied.
I didn't stick around to see anything else.
There were just a few at first, the professor added, as the girls and I started in on our food and drinks. And really, until that iguanodon crashed through the Tesco, I don't think anyone really believed that there were dinosaurs loose in England. Like so many others, I've been trying to find a pattern. But they seem to be from all different periods, and there's no logic to how they appear. We've only seen a few herbivores, I noted. It's mostly been carnivores. Yes, that's been true here as well. An oddity, given that there should be more herbivores than carnivores, and initially there were just a few. But that number has increased dramatically recently. We're seeing far more dinosaurs. It's why there's hardly anyone here, the man with the sister said. People are too scared to leave their homes.
So why are you here?
Becca asked as she tested her tea. We live close by, the man replied, and we get tired of being cooped up with just our own selves for company.
Gilda lets us come here and talk,
the card-playing woman added with a nod to the barkeep.
Even though she can't get any supplies. And I've got to use what I have,
the barkeep replied,
or it'll all go bad.
We listened as the locals chatted some more about the dinosaurs that had been seen locally, as well as the growing number of giant creatures that were starting to appear. As I listened, I realized that the numbers had started to increase dramatically in just the last few days, and I wondered if we had waited too long to leave Cambridge. I glanced at Becca and Haywan and saw the worry in their eyes as the professor started to list the dinos that had appeared and where they had appeared, at least according to the bits and pieces of information that had found its way into Bourne. Many hotspots, I realized, were on the road to Lincoln.
You're brave souls,
Gilda declared when we'd finished our scones and tea.
You wouldn't find me trying to travel the roads these days.
You never did say why you were traveling, the professor noted. Beyond a need to leave Cambridge.
My mum lives in Yorkshire,
Becca replied.
I wanted to reach her, and my friends offered to help. Those are some good friends,
the card-playing woman replied.
You should hang on to them.
I intend to,
Becca said as she looked at me and Haywan.
I'll add you to my prayers,
the barkeeper said.
But you never did say your names. I'm Becca,
the blonde Brit replied.
And these are Haywan and Jason. At least you have family nearby,
the barkeeper noted.
Jason and Haywan, you're so far from home.
Perhaps we will find a new one in Yorkshire,
Haywan replied.
The three of us are family now.
I hope you do, the professor said. It doesn't seem likely that we'll see any type of global travel for some time. It was a sobering thought, and the pub fell silent for several minutes as we all contemplated how the world had changed so dramatically in such a short time. I thought about my own parents, now divorced, and living in different states, and I hoped that they were okay. I wondered if my dad had been able to make it to my grandfather's farm, or if he was still in the city. And then there was my mom, probably in a small town in central Florida with her new husband. I hope she had made it to Orlando, since the last bit of news I'd seen from the States said that it was one of the cities that the federal government was protecting, but I had no idea if that had happened. I glanced at Haywan, since she was even further from her family, and was surprised to see that she didn't seem very concerned. The Korean beauty caught my eye and shrugged.
My family will be okay,
she said.
My father always has plans.
Even for dinosaurs rampaging through Seoul?
Maybe not dinosaurs, but he will adapt. They're probably all gathered at the family compound on Jeju. I'm sure he has found my brothers and brought them there, and he'll have plenty of people to protect the property.
Jeju? I asked. That's an island, right?
In the south.
I thought you were from Seoul.
My father has many homes,
the raven-haired woman said.
Wait, did you say he would have people to protect the property?
Becca asked.
He has many employees,
Haywan said.
Those are some loyal employees if they're protecting your father's family compound instead of heading off to see their own families.
The blonde noted.
They are very loyal,
Haywan replied.
And for many, my father's family is their family.
Becca and I stared at the Korean for several moments, but apparently she wasn't going to tell us anything else about her relatives. I realized then that Haywan had never told us much about her family, beyond their desire to have her graduate with an engineering degree. I knew there were brothers somewhere, and a grandmother who liked to knit and cook, but I had no idea what her father did, beyond making money as a businessman. And her mother was a complete enigma whom Haywan had barely even mentioned.
I guess we should get going,
Becca finally said.
If we're going to make Scampton before nightfall.
Yeah, we might have to think about that, I said as we stood up. We may have to stop somewhere tonight if we keep having dinosaur encounters.
I can't believe how long it's taking us to reach Yorkshire. I used to make this trip by train all the time. And to think, I stayed on campus because I didn't want to spend 3 hours on a train and then have to Uber to Ravenscar.
We thanked Gilda and the rest of the Bourne residents. Then we stepped back outside. We climbed over the sandbag, scurried back to the alley, and eased our bikes back onto the road. I waved to Gilda's guards just before we drove away, and then we were back on the A-15 on our way to Lincoln. On the north side of Bourne, we passed through a couple of small villages that didn't seem to have either names or people. One had been demolished by a bomb strike, and the other one, while still standing, had taken heavy damage. It only emphasized that the dinosaur menace was spreading, and I started to wonder if we should even stop at Scampton. Near a petrol station and fish and chip spot, I signaled the girls to pull over. The pair followed me into the parking lot, and then around the corner and behind a dumpster. I turned my bike off, and the girls did the same, though I could see the curiosity in their eyes.
So, what's with the top-secret meeting?
The blonde asked as she brushed her hair from her soft brown eyes.
Did you not trust the people in Bourne?
Haywan asked as the blue-eyed Korean looked toward the road. No, I assured the pair. I think they were straightforward with us, but what they said has me wondering if we should even go to Scampton. Maybe we should just skip the drop-off and head straight to Yorkshire.
Seriously?
Becca asked in disbelief.
It's not that far out of the way.
I know, but there are more dinosaurs appearing now, and not just in the cities. How many have we encountered since we left Cambridge? And then think about how many more we'll run into the longer we stay on the road.
Well, but some of those we wouldn't have run into if we hadn't helped out Wolston,
Becca said. And if we go to Scampton and they ask for our help, I prodded.
But the Brigadier said it was important,
Haywan said. So why put it in a briefcase and hand it over to a group of civilians? I asked.
Then what do you want to do?
Becca asked.
I mean, we could just go to Yorkshire, but we did promise.
I know we did. And that's the problem. I'd feel guilty if we didn't drop it off, but I don't want to waste time at a Royal Air Force base if we don't have to be there.
Then why don't we open the case?
Haywan suggested.
See if there really is anything important in there. If there isn't, then we can just go straight to Yorkshire and not feel bad about it.
It was a conundrum, and in normal circumstances, I wouldn't hesitate to drive straight to Scampton, leave the briefcase with the person in charge, and never even open the thing to find out what was so important. But that world was coming to an end very quickly, and the short side trip to the RAF base added innumerable dangers to our trip in this dinosaur-infested part of the planet. We'd survived so far, but part of that was just dumb luck. And while our skills were growing, so was the threat level. I wanted to help save this world if I could, but I wasn't so sure that the contents of the briefcase would do that.
I could open it,
Haywan said.
It's similar to locks I've opened before. No one will even know that I've done it.
Another reason to think it's not that important, I said, as I pulled the briefcase from my backpack. Why put anything important in a normal briefcase? Shouldn't it be in one of those bomb-proof steel cases?
Maybe he couldn't find one,
Becca said.
I doubt he carries one around whenever he deploys.
I stared at the briefcase for a moment and then sighed. All right, let's do it, I said. Let's find out what Walston thinks is so damn important.